Okay, welcome to the Lately in JavaScript podcast hangout. This is episode 44, and as always, I have here with me Artur Sosins from the warm Latvia. Hello, Artur.
Yeah, very warm. We can even swim in 18 degree water, so it's real warm for us.
That's for brave people from Latvia that are used to face very cold temperatures. And well, this month, as always, we have several interesting topics, things that happened in the JavaScript world, and we are going to start precisely about one piece of news about a contributor of the Node.js community that sort of made a commotion, or maybe not. I'm not sure. Let me share the article here. No, this is large enough. TJ Holloway, he has been a contributor of many packages for Node.js for many purposes. And basically, he made a statement, wrote an article in his blog, and it just telling the world why he switched from Node.js to Go. And this seems to be a recurring topic. Many complaints about not just Node.js specifically, but also the way things are done in JavaScript. Lots of complaints about the very same things. Many things that we've talked of previously several times a year, the callback hell, and the other problems that he mentioned here that are more specific to Node.js. But I can see several times mentioned callbacks suck. Seven ways to say that callbacks suck. And this seems to be yet another complaint that people are sort of making an effort to like the callback way to deal with asynchronous programming. Artur, have you looked into this? What were your impressions about this complaint? Isn't this a deja vu situation?
We talked about that lots of times, especially the callback hell. And I don't know. From his perspective, he was managing Node.js code for production and needed to write lots of code just to handle some specific cases that, by his opinion, were supposed to be handled by the language or environment itself. And probably he's right. But on the other hand, I can't say much about Go.
Yeah.
Is it superior to Node.js or to JavaScript as a language? Because Go is actually something rather new, something I haven't tried, not even in production, but just didn't even play with it, try it. I know, I think Google created no Go language, right?
Yes, I think it was from somebody from Google.
Yeah.
I just don't know exactly, because to be honest, I didn't check much about Go, the Go language. What I learned is basically very similar to JavaScript, because JavaScript is also very similar to Java in many in many cases. It also supports untyped variables and stuff. But the only thing that I really noticed that could be different is that they have the so-called Go routines. Let me share some screen here. And they basically, I don't know if this is large enough. Let me try to increase. Okay. Mm-hmm. And as you may see here, this is very similar to something that we mentioned recently. You can define a function here. And you just go call the Go or use the Go command, and it will call this function. to execute. I think it is in parallel. I don't know if it creates a separate thread or it is something that is executed in parallel but in the same thread. But this is what I've heard, that it would be a way to implement parallel processing with Go. And what I mentioned is that we have seen this recently is about the Facebook hack language, which is a sort of a fork of the PHP language, but adds things like this. It's also possible to call code that is executed in parallel. The way it is executed is sort of mysterious because we are not sure if it is all running in the same thread, and with some magic you get a way to wait for the parallel procedures to execute, because it says there is a sync package that provides useful primitives. I did not go there.
Can you run the code that was shown before?
Yeah, I think I can run. And what it does, I think it just calls some server here that executes this code on the server, because this is not a browser side thing.
But are the world and hello like consecutive? There is always world, hello. Oh, you see, there is a... Okay. It seems so.
Yeah, and
so they are not overlapping.
I'm not sure. Well, it is supposed to run like 5 times, and display the.
Wait, the first one is hello.
Well, that's a bit. This seems to mean that it's all executed in parallel, so it does not guarantee that the order will be like that.
And, that's what I wanted to check. Yes.
Well, I could not understand much why it printed many times hello. It's supposed to print...
it should print both.
Go say... well... Oh, okay, I see. I just thought it was going to run once. But anyway, it seems to be in order, like it executes one or the other. Mm-hmm. So this suggests when it calls the sleep function here, it gives the processor back to the other, any other code that is running. So maybe this is not really parallel processing, just collaborative multitasking, on which one task gives the CPU away to another task when it is not using CPU. So when you call this sleep function, it will wait for a period of time and then give the CPU back to another task that is running it, and so on, because that's why it seems to be synchronous here. I mean, it executes one statement after the other. And, this doesn't matter. What matters is that it is more pleasant than the callback hell. There is a sleep function, which means that you can sleep, pause the execution for a while, and you don't have to use callbacks for intervals. This is definitely much more pleasant programming than the callback hell. We said that many, many times. And so it's practically the same as what Facebook hack does. Except that this is not compatible with any JavaScript, Facebook hack is compatible with PHP. So if you have PHP code libraries, you can use them right away with Facebook hack. While here, if you have JavaScript libraries, you have to port them to Go.
And you also, you can't just take Go and create a web app, a front end, because I don't think it runs in browser like simple like that. It needs some kind of its own environment, so virtual machine to execute. So I think it would be mostly a backend. I think Google Engine supports Go. So yeah, basically it's competitive to Node.js, but
you mean App Engine?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't check, but I was not sure about that. I know that nowadays they even support PHP in
Oh,
the
really?
Happy Engine. Yeah, well, that's like the other year. They announced it in 2014.
Yeah,
And
so Google was the last one to implement PHP support. All the other services firstly implement PHP support. Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, they've been like delaying it for 5 years, but we mentioned that in the past year because that was we mentioned it in the PHP podcast because it was like when Google finally decided that they could not ignore a language that is present in 75% of the web servers. It's like
even Google
it's
can't
not
do
it's
it.
Not just PHP, it's WordPress. The first thing that they made an effort to make it work well in the App Engine was WordPress, but that's okay. That's a different topic. That's the PHP world. The only thing that we are talking about that is related with PHP is about the support for parallel programming or something somewhat similar to that. And what Go seems to implement is very similar to Facebook Hack. And so the conclusion here is that people sort of been making a huge effort to tolerate the callback hell, and I've said it many times, but people from the Node.js are very stubborn. They think, oh, this all has to be done the callback way, and I don't know if it is possible to make Node.js work like with the Go routines. I have not even read anything from anybody that would claim that is possible or not. But I think whoever is concerned about this, if it is possible to make it work like that, they will probably make an effort because you can see that's not something technically impossible. Maybe they have to change something of their internals, but probably it's something that is feasible. Well. Anyway, this is just to mention about this topic. I don't think it is that important. It's just yet another developer complaining about the callback hell. Probably an important developer for the Node.js, and maybe just saying that Node.js needs to be improved, or else we'll all move to Go. I don't think they want to waste all the effort they have done on Node.js, all the libraries, all the packages that are making them productive to just to switch to another language. Maybe it's just to make a statement to motivate the core Node.js developers to wake up and move on, because the way it is not very, very pleasant, not very productive. Okay, next topic we're going to talk about something that is also, I think we have commented something about this, which is to take more advantage of the existing hardware. Let me share the screen here. Well, this is an article about SIMD, which is a way to execute complex instructions with a single command. And this is very suited to for instance, operations with matrices and other
any mathematical calculations, basically. Especially the floating points, I think.
Right, and these are very useful for instance, for games or rendering engines that need to perform complex calculations. Although nowadays, at least for JavaScript, there are OpenGL libraries that could be used to manipulate graphics with the underlying hardware. But I think in this case, from what I got, is to use the main CPU.
Or GPU.
Oh, well, I'm not sure about if they use GPU, but if they use it, it's probably transparent. You don't have to be concerned.
Yeah.
And they even show here some
benchmarks.
Some examples of how much this library made it possible to accelerate, like 4 times. Mandelbrot fractal. This is basically to make it more efficient to perform complex operations that deal with large amounts of data at a time, like for instance data from matrices. So this is just to mention that if you need a really fast performance, you can use this. I'm not sure if this is a library or is it some runtime extension that you need to use. This was really not clear for me. I don't know. What did you get?
Well, if you remember, there is a thing called mscripten, your favorite one. And I don't know if it was the same developer or they're somehow tied together, but mscripten uses a subset of JavaScript, awesome.js, which basically executes instructions on a lower level, and this would be the explanation of how they seem to achieve it. Basically, it's either similar subset of JavaScript, or maybe it's the same API that they are using for different processor, CPU or something. But yeah, basically it shows it how there could be a lower level, some kind of, it's like a subset of JavaScript, but it's a lower level, so thus it's making it faster. It's kind of hard to grasp at first, but yeah, that's how it works. So using some kind of direct APIs for CPU or GPU processing.
So can we use this on the browser, or is it a Node.js thing? Or
I think it's a browser specific, because I don't think if Node.js does any rendering, but it's I think it's mainly meant to be used for WebGL or stuff like that rendering. So, but probably also calculations without rendering could be done. But mainly, I think it's a browser access to a lower level hardware.
Useful things like fractals.
Also that.
Okay, well, moving on, the next topic we're talking about a library from Telerik. I think this company is developer of .NET components, if I'm not mistaken. And they announced the native script library, which is a cross-platform framework for building native mobile applications. So you can use it to develop applications that run the same on Windows Phone, Android, and iOS systems. I have here a diagram. I'm not sure what I think the diagram here just includes what is in the middle,
yeah,
a native script, and the rest is just what it integrates with, not that you be able to program those parts with the native script. And this seemed interesting, although it seems yet another attempt to simplify the development of mobile applications for multiple platforms. And for now, it's beta, and you can you can request access to the beta. So this can be interesting if you are looking forward to develop applications for these platforms. I don't know, Artus, you are more used to the mobile native mobile application development. What did you get from this proposal?
Yeah, well, basically, there were always different solutions. Some were simply showing web view in the app, showing your mobile app through the web view, basically how it is in the browser. That was, I think, jQuery Mobile, Kendo UI. Then there were hybrid applications, which usually show something from the web view, but could also access some kind of native stuff, like native API. That was the phone gap, which is now Cordova, I think. And there was some layers that try to combine native UI from mobile applications, like Titanium does this. And I think that Windows 8 even had the whole JavaScript API available for all the components they have, and they provided it themselves. So the native script here seems to be combining all of this together in one single layer that could be used with any of the technologies and frameworks I mentioned. So it's like a combined API to all of the all of these options. Seems something like that to me.
Yeah, well, just to let people know about this is yet another option to consider. They say they make it available beta, but it was not even clear for me if it was open source or maybe not.
It seems they will be selling some kind of licenses. I've read it somewhere to mention, but it's not yet available to for sale for.
Yeah.
It's not also production available, so.
Okay. Well, for now, it's that what we have, and whoever is interested may check it out. So now moving on to another interesting library. In this case, it is a library from YouTube. Okay. It's called SPF. Let me zoom it here.
Can't see anything.
Does it show to you already? No.
No.
Okay, is it showing now?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this is called SPF, Structured Page Fragments, as they call it. And basically, it's a framework to handle the navigation of pages that can be updated in fragments, so you can load your page much faster, and then you you replace fragments of the page instead of loading it in full at all at once, and have to wait for the whole page to load. And it seems they've been using this on YouTube, and it is interesting. I don't know if this would be useful to generate pages that are friendly with the user interface. I mean, with Google indexing, because obviously this is meant to be friendly with the users, but sometimes it's not very, 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 very friendly with the search engines that try to crawl the pages, but they don't find the whole content. And this ties to a topic that last month where I've updated the user interface for the package pages on PHP class and JS classes. And after a week, the code noticed that the search engines have dropped the ranking of the pages, because probably they have not found all the content there, because all the content now is in tabs, and you switch the tabs, and some content is loaded dynamically. But most of the content is on the page already. It was not even that. So the search engine seemed to only index the content that is visible to the user on the first load. If it is not visible right away, they probably ignore it, and that is not very good. So what happened is that I had to revert very quickly to the old user interface for users that are not logged, because the users that are logged, they can benefit from the new user interface that is much faster, much better in terms of letting the user know where to find the things they want. But for some reason, Google did not like it. So I had to revert it for a while and figure if it is possible to fix anything. So anyway, talking about this library, it is not really something new. Probably the thing that made me notice it is that it is from YouTube, so it's from Google, and well, this somehow reminds me the way Facebook also does the page updates. They usually load first a skeleton, and then they fill the sections of the page gradually, and it feels much faster because the user doesn't have to wait to start seeing something. Sometimes certain sections take a little while to appear, but they end up appearing sooner or later, and the user does not have to be stalled. You can interact already with parts of the page while the rest is still loading. I don't know if there is anything else interesting to say, Artur, anything else that you notice to be relevant?
Well, yeah, I think I've heard about it some long, long time ago when they started doing it, and there was a blog post that it was really reducing the loading time and freeing server resources. It was more efficient and faster. And I only recently started noticing that they switched all the YouTube to something like that, because my Opera, old Opera, can't handle it anymore. So I can only access YouTube from newer Google or Opera browsers. So that was an interesting fact. And yeah, I don't know about search engine optimizations, but YouTube is Google. They might, you know, pumping the information directly to engine somehow through a secret API or something, or using any of the methods we discussed on previous podcasts, like push states or other Ajax-like SEO engine optimizations.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about them, but at least in this implementation of the new user interface of PHP Classes.js classes, I have used HTML push state, so you can move on to sections of that page, and it updates the URL to some hash that identifies that section. But in theory, Google would be able to crawl that, but in practice, probably taking it as a separate page, or maybe it is not crawling it well at all. I don't know. I still have to figure, but for now I have reverted it to the old clumsy user interface that is all in a single page and everything is visible. And
yeah, basically, but it's still a mystery.
Yeah, well, from what I see in YouTube, they don't update the URL for even when you are in the same page. So it's probably not so much about navigation. It's more about page loading, split it in multiple sections. And, well, that's what it seems to be. Anyway, let's move on to another topic on which we comment about this article, about something that was not familiar that it exists. They call it mutation observers. And they are used to sort of listen to changes in your page, events that affect the DOM page elements. I'm trying to share the screen here. Let's see. Can you see it now?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is basically a way to see if parts of your document or your page has been changed. And I think this is mostly useful, for instance, when you have online editors that are basically parts of a page that is being composed by the user with typing text or copying, pasting parts of the document. And since it is all done asynchronously by the user, it's not that you have to write code to implement things like copying and pasting. So user can change the document, and you don't know when it is changed unless you have something to observe changes in the DOM. So this API, which seems to be part of the HTML5 specification, I mean, at least one part is for that purpose. You can you can listen to events that process changes. And they have an example here how to, you can use it. I'm just not sure if many browsers support this API.
As I'm looking at it right now, here is a table, and it seems that, well, the latest versions should support it, like even Internet Explorer 11, Opera with new WebKit engine, and Safari. It seems that, yeah, the newer versions support it, but I don't know if there is any kind of fallbacks or quirks to make it work on older browsers. Probably not.
Yeah. So if you are running an old browser, you have to figure what to do. I mean, you have to figure some other way to listen to changes in your document if you need them. And well, this is just to mention something. I'm not sure if this is a recent API. I did not find it. I think it is about HTML5, but I could not find exactly where it came from. Well, anyway, it's just for you to to take a look and notice what are what you can, what if you have any good purposes for this. Okay, well, moving on now, I'm going to talk about another library that is interesting because it is claimed to be useful for building first-person games. Yeah. It's an engine that they developed in 265 lines. So it you can sort of create the basics of a game that you can have your player as a view in a, as first person. It can even run a demo. I don't know if it is.
So can you walk?
Yeah. Okay, can you see this?
Oh yeah, now you're moving.
Yeah, well, I don't know, do you see these vertical lines?
It seems to be rain emulation.
Yeah, that's what I thought, but it's a bit hard of a rain, but okay, it's an attempt. Don't make it look like rain. It doesn't stop raining.
Oh, it seems like a real hand.
That's why it only has 265 lines, because it's all the same. It's always raining, and yes. Well, it's nice. It's just so you to see that you can develop these things in JavaScript in your browser. Mm-hmm. I don't know what are the requirements if you need to have OpenGL.
What do you mean?
Yeah, I mean if you have to have OpenGL enabled browser.
Oh yeah, WebGL. Right. I think yes. Most probably, it's not simply canvas drawn. It would be really, really, really slow. So
yeah,
yes.
I think
so. Probably you won't be able to play it on mobile phones yet.
Yeah, and it has several functions to for you to define maps.
Oh, yeah.
And things like that. It's probably good for my son that likes first-person shooters.
Yeah, now he
or
can
maybe
make
not. He likes to
play them.
He likes to play them, not exactly program them. But okay, this is this is just a suggestion for something that can be useful, not exactly for you to develop.
To create business applications.
Right, exactly. Okay, moving on. Now we're going to talk about a library that is somehow useful for applications that. Need to integrate to Google Analytics, probably need to generate some events. And it's funny that they call it Boba. And Boba means dumb in Portuguese. Maybe that's there is a reason behind that name.
Unfortunately, I can't find the author's name, so I don't know if he is a Portuguese or not.
Probably is a Brazilian. Because they are very funny, they're always trying to make jokes. Anyway, sometimes Boba means like it's very simple.
Yeah, that could do it.
And that could be the explanation for the name. But still, we don't know where the name came from. Anyway, the idea of this library is just for you to track, help tracking events. You can define the events that you want to track and use some callbacks. For instance, you can watch the clicks and probably detect where the clicks that the user clicked, what pages they were going. I don't know if this would be able to track click events on, for instance, ads, because ads are displayed inside the iframes, and iframes from different domains there, they do not allow you to pick on what they about the details of the event and so that happen on those iframes. So maybe at least you can track clicks on links that are, you know, on the current page. I mean, not inside any iframes. So I think this could be useful for special purposes. For instance, like you want to know the user that visited a page, where did he go? Did he left the site for another site, or left the site to another? I mean, left the current page for another page in the same site.
Mm-hmm.
And Arthur, you have worked with Google Analytics. Yeah. I don't know if this is something that really adds some value to the Google Analytics library, or just a wrapper to do mostly the same.
Oh, it provides kind of advantages. First one, that there are different Google Analytics APIs. There was an older version, now is a newer version, and this library seems to be working with both of them, so it's easier to transit, and probably if there will be newer versions, they would support it also. So like transiting the code from Google Analytics version would be easier with that. It provides some kind of predefined scenarios where you want to track some events with clicks. You don't need to lot of the boilerplate codes, so it's like a much more compact and easier to understand. And it uses jQuery. So if you are a jQuery user and you are used to lots of jQuery stuff, like, I don't know, jQuery events receiving chaining, probably, basically jQuery API. So yeah, this one also for you. It would be much easier to use than original Google API.
So this is for jQuery programmers.
Yeah, not for JavaScript programmer. Yeah, exactly.
That's very different. Okay, well, this is mostly it. Now we are going to move on to one of our regular sections, on which we're commenting about the JavaScript Innovation Award nominees. And this month we're going to talk about the nominees of April. So they were voted on May, and then in June the results come out. So now you can comment about all of them. There were like four nominees. Arthur, which ones would you like to comment?
Yeah, first one which I would like to comment is Robert Haddad from Jordan. And what he created is a jQuery plugin. That's a point, which can display charts and bars. Let me try to show you demo. Yeah, basically here, this is an example which shows the usage. You can define lots of parameters, provide values and colors and titles, and basically it's all generated here. Let me try to check, for example, I don't know if it would load correctly. Yeah, so basically, yeah, it's drawn on canvas. That's what I want to check. So yeah, it's probably kind of right way to do it, not with HTML elements, but just want to check. Yeah, so basically, there is this is a small jQuery plugin that can draw charts.
Yeah, that is. It's interesting, although it's simple, because it can display bar charts in divs, and that means that you do not rely on canvas, and And so, well, nowadays all browsers support Canvas, but if you were concerned that somebody with Internet Explorer 6 is still using your site and you do not support Canvas, libraries like this can still be useful. Okay. Well,
and the second one I wanted to mention is I think it Jimmy Bo, we can call him. I think that was a pseudonym or something, maybe. Yeah. Okay. He's from Canada, and what he created is a simple package that enables you to create animations from CSS sprites, basically for image sprites. There was a simple example, like here we can see simple animation. Let me try it. I'll try with some code. So here you can see, I don't know if you can really see much from there, but basically you load a file and then you can define multiple animations from it by taking specific coordinates of the CSS sprite, and then you can like create separate animations from it and play them back. It's all done on the CSS change, so it should be all browser available. Thank you for
Jimmy. It's really neat, that library, because if you are into game development, you can already develop very simple games with using sprites, and that way the sprites can actually do all the animation positions of your characters, and you just to define with a few lines of code all the different positions of the animations are shared, are played to display the whole animations depending where your character goes. So this seems to be very neat, and could be a good starting point to develop at least simple 2D games. Okay, on my behalf, I would like to mention also a couple of classes. Let me share the screen here. The first one I would like to comment is about this one, JavaScript Advanced Table by Andras Toth from Hungary. And basically this is a package that lets you display tables, now as you may see from using the new user interface, it's very easy to show any screenshots. So as since the author provided the screenshots here, you can see a screen of the this package in action. It allows you to display the tables and even filter the rows that you want to show by searching from some records, and all this is done dynamically, and you can even edit some fields in place, which is very neat because it provides a much better user interface.
The so user it's doesn't... like a simple Excel.
Yeah, well, I think you can put it that way, and it seems to be interesting because it does something that was trying to figure out how I wanted to do, which is to fix the header rows. So you can scroll them, and in this season, to do this in a web page, it's not trivial. I thought it was just a matter of fixing the head rows, but you have to do some tricks to show the rest of the rows aligned with the headers. And anyway, this is a full solution for displaying editable tables, and so it's a great package from Andres. So kudos to him for his contribution. And the other package that I wanted to mention is a package from Matthew Hertel from the United Kingdom. While I'm showing this package, I'm also trying to show the new user interface of the JS classes and PHP classes site. And Now, when there are screenshots, it's much easier to try to show the things. And if you want to see, for instance, why this package was nominated, you can just click on the reputation tab, and it shows right away the Innovation Award comment. And the here in this reputation tab, you can just see why it is nominated, as well other details that pertain to the reputation, things like how many file of the percentage of the files that were imported from version control repositories, because using version control repository is a good practice. So this is highlighted as a reputation factor, as well other aspects like user downloads, the ranking, and also visits that this package got from such users from coming from Google. Anyway, about this package, this is a package that can simplify the building of user interfaces that can be either modal or so-called toasts, and it is very useful. And you can add dynamically elements as needed. Let's see if I was trying to show you a demo, but the author did not provide an example, so I cannot show you much. Anyway, this is to be useful or package and innovative, so kudos for the author for his contribution.
Yeah,
anyway,
now I can stop using Award and try to use something more fancy.
Oh yeah, right. And anyway, I was also, as I mentioned, I was trying to also try to show as much as possible about the new user interface. As you may see, it's much more fluid. You can go directly to the tabs and show the code and things very quickly. You don't have to go to separate pages as before. And the last tab there is, for instance, links to other pages. In this case, there is even a link here that goes to a demo page, which is in a separate page. But if this author added this link as a demo link, it would appear. I think, Arthur, I think you have added some demos to your packages, right?
Oh, maybe. Let me try to remember.
Let me search for packages from yourself. You don't recall? I think you did, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I was trying it out. Let me try to remember what it could be. I can maybe even try to do it now.
Yeah, okay. It probably would need to be approved. And
okay, I think there was.
Okay, there is one here, which is the one from the gestures.
Ah, okay, yeah.
And you can, as you can see, there is a demos tab, but it's funny because it doesn't, for some reason, this doesn't work inside iframes.
Oh, it does. It just has, for some reason, it has a smaller hit rate. So try it more to the left.
To the left?
Yeah, somewhere up, somewhere, yeah. It's, for some reason, it detects a smaller boundaries, yeah. But I would need to check that more. I don't know why it detects in normal browser, yeah. It detects normal boundaries.
Well, anyway, this is just enough to demonstrate that that you can... Oh, it's a triangle. It looks like a triangle.
You just can't draw.
Yeah, well, I can draw, but it said it is a triangle. Well, anyway, it's a square. Now it looks like a square. No, I didn't
try a circle.
A circle, there it is. Well, anyway, the point here is that there are you can show demos of your packages, yeah, inside of the page. You don't have to leave them, but it shows an icon that you can make the
Yeah, now it works.
Demo link, it works in a separate page, but for some reason, I don't know, maybe the offset of the iframe is confusing your...
Oh yeah, true, that's possible.
Your package. There's a good thing for you to fix. Anyway, you can try it here. You don't leave the page. That was the point that I was trying to make. You can do many things that got much better. For instance, if you want to see the ratings, you can click here. It even highlights some sections and showing the ratings and showing the details of the ratings. This one got 78%, and it shows the percentage of the details that were rated by the users. Utility, consistency, documentation you don't have, but you have examples, you have videos. Oh, that's interesting. You can go to the screenshots and see some videos in action. This is a screenshot of a fixed page.
This is more practical now.
So. Oh, it works. Now it's trying to load. For some reason, it's slow. It's interesting.
Because it's YouTube?
No.
Because it's about part of the page or something?
Just because I wanted to demo this, it doesn't
show
it.
That's the law. If you're demoing something, it won't work.
And it's trying to load it, and it doesn't want to go there. I hope it's not a bug. let me try and see if this is a problem. And I know this package has a video somewhere. And if I go to screenshots, I can videos. Well, it's not loading for some reason.
Oh,
maybe it's a bug
slides.
That I just introduced it, because it can show the screenshots. But okay, it's not working. Let's get back to the topics here. The point is just to show you that now the user interface is much better. You can go directly to the package files. Wait, and you can show the package files and go back and do not leave to the page. So anyway, Arthur, what did you think about these improvements? You somehow helped to give a giving feedback about the user interface.
Yeah.
Does it somehow fill your desires to make the user interface better, or do you think there is still things that could be improved?
When you display everything in one page, then it seems to be really cluttered, and now basically all the relevant information is displayed in the first page to determine if you want to download and try to use it. And you can easily navigate through the tabs if you want more information. So it's like providing you steps to test and try the package till you decide if you want to download it or not. And that's, I think, the main reason for the site, for usage of this site. So that's, I think, an improvement, because I myself download lots of packages and try out different libraries. It is the first place where I go when I need some kind of JavaScript library. So I use it mostly as a user, not as an author. And for users, I think that this UI is much better. For improvements, there could be some. For example, playing videos.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know.
That's probably a bug, something that was changed recently. But,
new user interface will need some time to get used to for users who have used sites a lot. I myself needed to get used to it, but once you get used to it, you feel it's better. It's more like natural navigation. You better understand what is where and how to put it.
Right. This was released like a couple of weeks ago, but there were still after that there was a few improvements. For instance, when you go to the ratings page, now the ratings form appears and you can rate it right on the page and do not need to leave it here. Also, the ratings were also simplified In the past, there was a pull-down menu for each option. Now you just click on a radio or something, and then you submit it, and it submits and still stays in this page, and then you can close it to go back. The same for downloads. I mean, in case install with Composer, you can show you some details here about installing the packages. And there were for a few other minor improvements that were just pending to be done on this update. So the idea...
Just wanted to mention that you can also click on the zip to download on the tab without opening it. That's the function I use really a lot, especially when redownloading packages that I already know about. So you can simply click on the zip on top and it will start download automatically. So.
Right. If you, for users that for some reason are not used to these changes in the user interface, they may probably not realize that that this is a tab, and when you click on a tab, it shows all the possibilities to install packages. And with clicking on the zip link, you go directly to the download of the package without even having to switch to the tab. And well, this is just to mention what was done, and I hope the users are enjoying it. One thing that I noticed that probably as a side effect of making this easier is that now users seem to be rating more packages than in the past, because so that is already a good.
Yeah, that's actually true. I also noticed the spike of ratings on some packages. So that's
yeah, and that's good, because it helps other users to figure which are the packages that are more appreciated, and that is one goal. And but hopefully I'll invest on other things that will encourage the users to rate more packages, because that helps the other users to find the packages that are more interesting, so they do not lose so much time evaluating packages that probably are not very well appreciated. That was one of the complaints. The users have to download, test the package to figure that the package is not very good, and if they can see some ratings, some comments, they can see it already. Let me see if I can show you an example, because the comments, when they are made public, they become ratings. I mean, the comments. I mean, the rating comments become forum threads of the package. For instance, in this case, this user rate this package. Not sure, because he did not find any documentation. So it is already good feedback, because the author now needs to provide some documentation. And when you go to the reputation, you can see the user comments right below here. This user did not find the documentation example, so he rated it like this. And
so maybe that does not mean much, because he was upset for not finding docs, but it also means that you also won't be able to find docs. So.
Right, so the users will know that this package may be useful, but it doesn't have documentation. But then other users can comment after that, and it shows the user comments in reverse order.
They can help each other to solve all the issues.
Yes, and if there are improvements, other users will rate it better, and the comments eventually will appear there. And this is useful to reduce the time that the users will take to evaluate packages that probably are useful or not. And well, this is just to mention just these improvements. But before we end this podcast, I just would like to mention about the rankings of the Innovation Award in the year. And so far, as you may see here, for now, the ranking here, already considering the nominees of May, the ranking so far is being led by Andres Jordan Mamolej from Spain, followed by Jimmy Bow from Canada. So somehow Andres passed Jimmy Bow, that was leading in the other month. And then there are they both have one Android have two packages, and Jimmy bought three. And then they are followed by several other authors with just one package. That is the ranking by author so far in for 2014. And for by country, also the contributions by Andwitz also helped Spain to move to the front. Like they have already the same amount of points, because it was just Andwitz that so far has contributed, but others can come and contribute to submit more packages that make his country go ahead. So Spain is followed by Canada, and then Italy also with two packages. But this only accounts so far till the nomination is in May, so it's still very early. It's not very clear who is going to lead, because there are not many nominated packages being considered. But I think this can become more interesting as we move on towards the end of the year. Well, basically, that's it. We practically ended this podcast. For some reason, or for the usual reasons, my webcam disappeared. So when my image no longer appears, but okay, that's
maybe you are ashamed.
Yeah, it's more a shame for using Google Hangouts. It was working well since the beginning, but then it stopped for some reason, and go and figure why it does that. Anyway, this is an interesting podcast. We practically reached the end, and so on by behalf. That is all for now. Bye.
Bye.